Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Yud Aleph and Aleph. The Mishnah says, Osim ma'akeh, the gag, ulamir peset, ma'aseh jot, aval lo ma'aseh uman. So this is one of the distinctions that we saw before with regards to the dispensations of melacha on Chol HaMoed, which is that some things that are tzorach ha-moed, things that are necessary for the moed, you're allowed to do, but only if you do it in a layperson's manner, not using craftsmen, not doing it in an expert manner. So in terms of a ma'akeh, which is an obligation to have a security fence around one's roof or around their merpeset because of the danger that presents in mitzvah min ha-Torah, that includes things like a swimming pool that must have a fence around it, that probably qualifies as a obligation of ma'akeh min ha-Torah, that anytime there's a danger to other people, possibly dying or being endangered by whatever's there, you have to put up a barrier to prevent people from going there. So here the Mishnah says that you can do that, but you have to do it like a lay person. You can't do it with craftsmen and worksmen on the Chol HaMoed. Now, Shafinat Tzedakim, you're allowed to fill in the cracks. Umagilin oto b'magila. You're allowed to roll it with the roller. So in order to press down the plaster that you're putting there, they used to have a hand roller, equivalent of a rolling machine, but heavy duty, you know, stone roller that flattens things out. So for this reading of the Mishnah, like we're reading it now, is that you can do that. B'yad regel, and you're allowed to pound it down with your hand or your feet. Avalo b'machalatzayim. You're not allowed to use what it seems to be some sort of flat form that had a post on it that used to stomp down on the plaster to flatten it out. So that's definitely a tool of the trade, something that's a little too craftsman-like, and therefore you can't do it. This flat plane that has like a stick on it that you're able to pound down with, that you can't do. What you can do is use your hands or your feet for that, or use the roller. Gemara will discuss all of this picture. Then, hatsir, vatsinor. The tzir and the tzinor are the two parts of their hinges on a door. The way our hinges work today, the two parts of the mechanism of the hinge are both centered in the middle of the door, and one inserts to the other, which is we have the hinges on both the door and the frame, and then you have a pin that goes into the middle. And there they didn't have it as sophisticated. They had a pin at the top of the door, a pin at the bottom of the door, and then a hole in the ground, and a hole in the lintel. And that's how they had their doors swing. Obviously, the difficulty with that is that it's going to rub against the lintel, it's going to rub against the threshold. The way that we suspend it off the ground is so that it doesn't hit the floor, doesn't hit the top, and the doors will last longer and open easier. But their doors were built with a pin at the bottom, a pin at the top, and then a hole in the ground, and a hole in the lintel. And then they inserted that, and that's how it opened, it pivoted on that pin and that hole. So the tzir is the pin, and the tzinor is the socket in which that pin goes. Va'kore, kore is the lintel. Va'man'ul, which is a lock. Va'mafteach, which is a key. Whether that really means a lock and a key, it might refer to different locking mechanisms. Right, there is the drop bar mechanism, and then there's the bolt, or, you know, a bolt that goes into the floor. There are different mechanisms for closing things up, but this literally means a key, or it's a form of locking. It's not clear here if the two are like a manual, a lock with a key, or there are two different types of locking mechanisms. Shinishbiru, if they break. Now, if they break, then you have a problem. Here it's on Chol HaMoed. It's something that's Tzorach HaMoed, otherwise you're going to lose the security of having these doors being able to close and to be locked. So in the mitaknan b'moed, those can be fixed on the Chol HaMoed. Ubavad shelo itkavein lasod melachto b'moed. It's an important principle, which is that you can't aim to do the work on Chol HaMoed. You're right, it is permitted to do such work on Chol HaMoed. But it can't be that you have the week before Yom Tov, that you could have fixed it then, and you ran out of time, you didn't get to take care of it, you were too busy, and also now Chol HaMoed, everybody's free, now I can take care of it. No, that's what you can't do that. Even though it's permissible to do this, that's only when it happens that it happens on Chol HaMoed or Yom Tov, and therefore you have to fix it then. But if you push off the work onto Chol HaMoed, then that is not permitted. V'chol ha-kvashim, shu yachol le'achol me'en b'moed kovshan. Anything that you can pickle that will be able to be used on Yom Tov or Chol HaMoed itself, you're allowed to pickle on Chol HaMoed. So again, this is something that's Tzorach HaMoed. Here it's even Tzorach Ochol Nefesh. By Tzorach Ochol Nefesh, there's even a lower bar of what you need. If it's Tzorach Ochol Nefesh, even an Uman can do Tzorach Ochol Nefesh. So here, you can pickle them, you can salt them. That's only assuming that you could utilize them during the Chol HaMoed or on Yom Tov, so therefore it becomes a Tzorach HaMoed, a Tzorach Ochel Nefesh of the Moed. Now, the Gemara wants to understand. Hechi Domi Maaseh Hejot. The Mishnah started out with the issue of the Ma'akeh around the Gag, and in discussing that, it separated between a Maaseh Hejot, a layperson's work, and a Maaseh Uman, that of the craftsman. What's the difference between a fence that's put up by a layperson and a fence that's put up by a craftsman? Rav Yosef Amar Behutza V'Dafno, that a fence put up by Hejot is made out of these, Hutza and Dafno, either because it's more temporary, it's not as strong, it's not going to be as permanent a structure, that's one reason to believe it, or Hutza and Dafno, it's not as fine a work. I mean, this is people can, anybody can do this, it's not, there's no need for a craftsman in order to put this up. Hutza and Dafno, Hutza are the leaves of the palm tree. Dafna, over here, Rashi says, are the uprights, the lechis, the stakes upon which you draw the palm branches across. That's how Rashi explains it here. If you go back to Daf Zion, Rashi said there was a byer, which was like a small hedge or low hedge, in which you weave the palm branches into. Rashi there gives a different explanation of what these chutzah dafna are. Whichever way they are, they're not as strong a fence, not as permanent a fence, and most importantly, they don't require a craftsman in order to put it together. But Nita Tano, here have another description of what is a temporary or a layperson's fence versus what is that of the experts. Tsar Bitzror Venutach Betit. That is that he puts the stones in there, but he does not plaster it in place. So similar type of idea. Anybody can pile up stones and make a fence in that manner, but if you start to plaster it and fix it in place, that's already much more involved. Permanent and a craftsman's work. Right, so now the Mishnah continues. Shafinet etztakim umaginoto b'magila. So the Mishnah seems somewhat inconsistent, which is it allows the user a roller, which seems to be a craftsman's tool and a significant tool. It won't allow you to use the machalat zayim, which was the pounder, the flattener. Why is that? Why does it allow you to use the roller and does not allow you to use the pounder? So that's what Gemara says. Hashto b'magila mart shari. You said it's mutar to use this roller. Then why does the Mishnah have to tell me that you can use your hand and your feet? Of course, if you can use a roller, of course you can use your hands and your feet. You don't need the Mishnah to tell you that. So this is when it says, Hachi Kamar, Shafinat Atztakim, again, you can smooth out, plaster over the cracks. Umagilin Otan Ke'ein Magila Biyad Beregel. Not that you can really use a roller. You can simulate the effect of a roller with your hand or your feet. So that's why. Now, aval lo b'machalat zayim, but you can't use the machalat zayim. So now, basically we've wiped out any usage of a tool that's of the trade or a tool of the craftsman. The only thing we let you use is your hands and your feet. You can try to simulate with your hands and feet the tools of the craftsman, but you yourself can't use tools of the craftsman. Now, atzir v'atzinor v'akora amanul v'mafteach shenishberu v'prok v'taknan v'moed. V'rimini, is that really true? Because this involves doing work that is going to cause a lot of noise, including hammering. Ad Yamav, Ayah Patish Makeh B'Yerushalayim. Here they're quoting from the Gemara in the end of Sota. Mishnah there describes by Yochanan Kohen Gadol some of the things that he did that were positive. One of the things that he did was he eliminated the sound of the hammers banging on Yerushalayim during Chol HaMoed. So the hammers banging on Chol HaMoed means, first of all, work was being done on Chol HaMoed. Number two is the noise was a tremendous amount of noise and disturbed the peace on Chol HaMoed. So he eliminated that. So now the Gemara says, Ad Yamav in Mikan Ve'elech Lo. That means until his time, hammers were used and that type of work was done. After that point in time, it was not done. Suggesting that how is it possible here that you're fixing the mechanisms of the door? The only way to fix the mechanism of the door is to use a hammer and to bang away at it. So if that's the case, how is that true? We said no more hammers after the time of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. The Gemara says, Lo Kasha. That's not a problem. Kan bin apache, kan bin agare. Depends what type of hammering we're talking about. Napache is the blacksmith. That's hammering on iron, on steel, which, first of all, makes a significant amount of noise and is much more involved type of work. That is what he stopped. Nagari are the carpenters. Those are the woodworkers. Even though that makes noise, it's still not to the extent of a blacksmith who is working with a hammer on metal, which is extremely loud and much louder than the nagari. Especially if it's done in a softer touch, the carpenters can even be quieter. But certainly that's the difference. And the Gemara is suggesting our Mishnah is talking about Nagare versus the Gemara from Soto, which is talking about the Napache, is talking about the blacksmith. Matki Flor Rav Chista. Rav Chista says, wait a minute, now you've opened up Pandora's box by doing that. Yomru Kala rabo asir. A loud noise is asur. Kala zutar shari. If it's a small noise, it's mutar. In that people no longer make a distinction in tzorach hamoed, not tzorach hamoed. There's something going to say. Loud noises aren't allowed. Softer noises are allowed. And that's not really a distinction we're trying to create over here. Happens to be the truth. But it's just not what we're after. We're after tzorach hamoed versus not tzorach hamoed. And the metalwork was most likely not tzorach hamoed. And even if it is tzorach hamoed, it has that additional feature, which is it's just too loud. It makes it very obvious that working is being done on chol hamoed. So it's only a secondary consideration, and you don't want that to become the primary consideration here. So Elam Rav Chista suggests a different answer. Lokasha, ha b'magle, ha b'chatzine. Depends on which tool you are using. Tools, it's not easy to explain them. Rashi says, magle are meser agadol shari. Sounds like a large saw. Delo molid kala klum. It doesn't make very much noise. Because, I mean, I don't know. Talking about the meser agadol was used to cut cheese and other things like that. Maybe it's because of the material it was cutting that had it, but he said it has less noise to it. Ha b'chatzine, which is a barasir davi olude kalotfe. It makes way too much noise, and therefore it's a problem. The translation I saw of these words, I saw b'chatzine is an adz versus a magle, which is a billhook. So whatever the tools are, I'm not...
Jackhammer versus...
Right, exactly. The difference in the tools is the amount of noise that is made by the different tools. One of them gives you an extreme sound and noise. So even though it's tzorach hamoed, we're not going to let you use it just because it's too extreme in the noise that's made, both from the perspective of disturbing the peace, but also making it obvious that you're doing melocha on chol hamoed. Whereas the magle was a little more of a tempered sound, and therefore they permitted you to use it because it wasn't disrupting the peace and wasn't as obvious that you were doing the work. Rav Papa Amar, Rav Papa offers another alternative answer here, the difference between our Mishnah and the Gemara and Sotah, which is, Kan Kodem Gzera, Kan Achar Gzera. So he reconciles it saying that our Mishnah is prior to the Gzera. Our Mishnah was taught before the Gzera, after the Gzera in Hachanami. Not only is it true by there, it's true in our Mishnah as well. The work cannot be done in our Mishnah because it's also subject to the change that Yochanan Kohen Gadol made. Ravashi suggests another answer, which is Ravashi Amar Ha Rabbi Yehuda Ha Rabbi Yossi. It's a difference between the position of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Dami Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi are the Mishnah coming up, and then beginning of the next parak, which we're going to do at the end of today's daf. But Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi this have a difference in opinion when it comes to Melechet Davar HaAved. When you're doing Melacha, which is for something that would sustain a loss on Chol HaMoed, which is permissible. In doing that Melacha, does it require you to do a Shinoi, or does it not require you to do a Shinoi? Can you do the Melacha just like normal? Because once you've given that dispensation, it means go ahead and do it. Or, no, the dispensation says now you're allowed to do it. How you do it is with a shinoi. It's machloket Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yehuda says you need a shinoi. Rabbi Yossi says you can go and do it like normal. So that's what the Gemara says here. Damar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, man tana shinoi b'moed, the dover aved, delok Rabbi Yossi. Anybody who requires a shinoi and a melocha of a dover aved and chol hamoed is certainly not holding like Rabbi Yossi. So if he's not holding like Rabbi Yossi, then you don't require any shino, you can do it like normal. So the suggestion being that Rabbi Yossi is the author of our Mishnah, and since he is matir without a shinoi, that's exactly what our Mishnah describes over here, hammering away, doing whatever you need to do without any shinoi, and that is why it is permissible. That's why there's no problem over here, because this is shitat Rabbi Yossi. According to Rabbi Yehuda, then you would require a shinoi, and therefore our Mishnah wouldn't necessarily be true. And once you do that, then you can definitely reconcile that with with Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Then we have an interesting statement, Gemara Meravina. Keman, madmina na'idna, kabyuto de dasho. Today, how do we, seems, madmina would seem to be to raise up. Ha'idna, now, days when we raise this up, kabyuto de dasho. Dasho is the lintel. It's the door jam or the door slam. But kabyuto, Rashi claims, are wooden nails that are in there. On Chol HaMoed. There are three different explanations brought down by the Rishonim about this. One is to raise the lintel itself. How do you raise the lintel? There are nails, wooden nails that hold the lintel up. Can you bang those nails up to push the lintel higher? That's what they're doing. The other possibility is to raise the cups or the pivot cups, the ones that we talked before about the hinges, that they have the pins that go into the holes in the ground and above. Can you raise those sockets by hitting the nails or pushing them up? And the other one was to raise the bolt cavity, which is that it's talking about like a door jamb or something that goes across that locks the door, like a bar that you put across. and the cavity on the other side into which it inserts, are you allowed to hammer or move that around? Okay, different possibilities about what this is. The only point being that he says, we go ahead, take a hammer out, and we bang the nails, or we fix it by hitting it with a hammer. We just go back. It's a davar haved, because you won't be able to open the door. It's a tzorach hamoed. Whatever the reason is that you're permitted to do it, but do you have to do any shinoi? It sounds like we don't make any shinoi. So who do we hold like? Come on, Rabbi Yossi. It's clear that we're holding like Rabbi Yossi, that there's no shinoi required when you have permission to do it, because it's either davar haved or tzorach hamoed. You don't have to go about it in an unusual manner. Kvashim shu yachol echol Eid Kovshan. So that's our Mishnah. Now, the next part of the Gemara is very difficult in terms of the Girsa. A number of ways to read it. Everybody agrees that Bedita is a canal or a river of some sort. That everybody agrees about. The remainder is somewhat questionable, which is Bedita, Levi, Kavre. So now, that's one way to read it, which is Bedita, Levi, which means Bedita, the canal, or the river Bedita in Levi, which is in this place called Levi. Kavre, they had all this fish. Azel, Kuliyama, Tzud, and the whole world came and captured it. Aitu, Kavro, and then they brought the fish home. Okay, that's one way to explain it. I'm going to explain all of what happened here in a minute. The other way to explain it is that Bedito, which is the name of the river, and then is Levi Kavre, that the fish were made available because either the water overflowed and pushed them out, or the river dried out, and that's what provided the fish. So the Levi Kavre means it provided the fish. It made the fish available. That's another way to read it. The last way to read it, which is very interesting, I think this, you look in the Bach quotes this in the name of the Ran, who's explaining the Rif's explanation here. He says that it's actually Pumpedita. We're familiar with Pumpedita. The Bedita is part of the Pumpedita. So Pum is the name of the place that is on the river of Bedita. That's how it got its name. Pum Bedita is because it's Pum on the Bedita River. So he explains it that way. And then he explains the Vai Kavre the same way, which is that it swept up the fish. So what happened here, according to everybody, is that the river was running. Either it washed over the banks, or the river dried out, and all of a sudden there was a boatload of fish available. And somebody's screaming out, everybody come, come get your fish, get your fish, grab your fish. There's all this fresh fish here. Only problem is, you know, fresh fish is only fresh for very short duration. When you don't have refrigeration, it's not going to last very long. So you got to do something with the fish. What are you going to do with the fish in order to preserve them? You're going to salt it. So now this happened on Chol HaMoed, and you're going to go salt the fish. So now, Sharalu Rovo the Mimlach Minayu. He allowed them to salt all the fish that they collected. Some of the Abaye says to Rovo, Vehatna in our Mishnah. Kvashin Shehu Yachol Echol Me'en B'Moed. Anything that you can pickle or salt and utilize it on Chol HaMoed, then you can do it. That's the only permission to do it, which is Yochol Chol HaMoed Kuvshan. Then you can salt them. Otherwise, you can't. Here, it's clear that the quantity of fish that were captured or taken in now way exceeds what anybody's going to use on Chol HaMoed. If that's the case, how are they permitted to salt the fish? So he says something here, an answer here that we saw, again, previously on Daf Yud. It's a very important principle, which is why are the people collecting the fish? They're picking up the fish because they intend to eat them. They're going to eat them on Chol HaMoed. They're going to eat them at some point. And then they realize they just have too much. The quantities way exceeds what they can eat on Chol HaMoed. Now, if they leave them at this point, paste, they're going to lose money. Therefore, it's like a business transaction in which the principal is at risk. Correct, okay. Bishari, and therefore it's mutar. So your question is a fair question. It's a distinction that the Rishonim made before, which is the difference between an aveda. An aveda, which is not called something where you would lose money because it wasn't yours to start with. It's almost like an opportunity cost because you didn't own it. You're not losing principal. The aveda is there. But Rava makes a clear distinction here that if it was for the fact, had you asked me, can you go pick up the fish? He would have said no. If you ask me that quantity, that's not called a davar haved. The point here is that they already took the fish home. And that's what makes the distinction over here, is that the fish is already in their possession. He said they took it with the intent to eat it. So he's assuming they took it for the right reasons. But now they're in a bind. Once they've done that and they're in a bind, then it changes the status of the fish. Now it does become a loss because they took it in their possession and now they own the fish. They own the fish, they have the fish, now they have to make a decision about it. What are they going to do? Throw it out or salt it? Those are the two options. They leave the fish in the riverbed, and it rots there, ain't no chanami. You're right, that's not called davar haved. That's opportunity cost. That's the loss of Veda, and we wouldn't say anything. But now they took it home already, and they brought it to the house. It's now their principal. It's their possession. That changes the status. That's exactly what Rova makes here. He makes one point, which is they had permission to take it because he took it for Achila. Then, after that, there's a decision point. That decision point makes it like Dover Oved, and that's why you're allowed to salt it. V'ika Damrei, now here's a different approach, which is Shari Luhu Rova Meitzad. Meizel, I teach to you, Umimlach. Not only did Rova say that they could salt it, but Rova was even before the fact. They came and checked them, can we go collect the fish? So the first way that we read it, Rova only permitted them to salt it once they'd already taken it home. Had they come and asked them, can they take it, they might not have gotten an answer that was positive because of this exact problem that you just raised, which is, that's not Dover Aved, so don't take so much. But here, the next way that we have the Gemara is, Sharle Ruhu Rova Meitzad. Rova said, go ahead and capture them, collect them. Meizal, it's you. Go ahead and bring them home. Umimlach, and salt them. Doesn't our Mishnah say that only things that you could salt and use on that period of time are you allowed to do this for? So he says something very interesting. He says that salted fish does not preclude you from eating it. Meaning that generally in the process of pickling or salting an item, it goes through an intermediary stage where it's not edible. Meaning that it's edible at the first point. Then you put it into the pickling process, which makes it inedible for a period of time. And then at the end of that process, you're able to eat it again. So the question is the duration of that process. If the duration will be done during the Chol HaMoed for this item, then fine. If not, then you can't use it. What he says is that fish can always be taken out of this process. Is that fish, when you salt the fish, all you have to do is itzitza. Itzitza means that you press it or sochet it. If you squeeze the fish, you can squeeze out the salt, you can squeeze out the liquid, and you can always get fish back to its fresh state. I mean, that equivalent of what we would do to defrost. A frozen fish can always be defrosted and used on the spot. So their equivalent of their refrigeration is salting. And the same thing is true here, that they can always, quote-unquote, defrost it, which is they can always get the salt out. And they can do it in a fast way, and that means that the fish is ready to eat at all times. Whenever you salt it, it doesn't put it out of mind, you could eat that fish. And here the Gemara gives examples of that, which is, Giyad Shmuel, Abdulay Shitin Itzitzei V'achal. They went ahead and they squeezed it or pounded on it 60 times, and then he ate it. And this was a fish that was salted, and then he was able to eat it after they cleaned it out. The number 60 is obviously a Derech Guzma. 60, as we know, is one of the Babylonian structure is a unit structure of 60, and that's why it's used. 60 minutes, 60 seconds, that's where we get it from. Then we also have it, Batel B'Shishim, which is also used in the Gemara. It's not literally, we'd use it, halakhically, literally 60 to 1. But the truth is that it was just a huge number. 60 to 1 was a very big number. The real qualification is notin tam. That's really what we're after. They just said at 60 to 1, for sure it's not notin tam because that's just an excessive number. But why the number 60 came up is because 60 was a unit in the Babylonian system and a large unit in that sense. So you always went to 60 and that was it. So now, when they say 60 here, it doesn't necessarily mean they literally did it 60 times. It just means they did it quite a number of times. So Rova Iklo the Bay Reish Galuta, he went to the house of the exilarch, Avdile Shitin Itzev Achal, same thing. They had fish, squeezed it out 60 times, a number of times, and he was able to eat it. But that what shows you is that the fish is ready to go anytime you want it. So if you salt it now, you're not pushing it out of your ability to use it on Chol HaMoed. You could still use all the fish on Chol HaMoed. Rav Iklo the Bay Rav Shapir. Rav went to the Beit Midrash, or the house of Rav Shapir. Rashi says here was B'moed. This was on Chol HaMoed, or during Yom Tov. Aitulu Kamayu, they brought out in front of them to eat, how kavra, this fish that was tilta bishula, one-third cooked, tilta milcha, one-third salted, vitilta tavya, and one-third roasted. So some sort of delicacy that involved whether it means that the third and third and third of the fish were like this, or the fish only had one-third of the roasting process, one-third of bishula and one-third of salting, meaning that together they added up to a cooked item. But the process was done in thirds, meaning that you roasted part of it, then you cooked it, and then you put salt on it in that process, and that was the processing of the fish. And now Rav comes to tell us a number of things that he learned, which is Amarav. Amar li Ada Tzaido, Ada the fisherman told me, Kavro samuch lemistruche mali. Fish, right before it's going rotten, when it's on the edge of going rotten, that's when it's best. V'amarav, Amarli Aida Tzadi. Yeah, we're gonna work on this in a second. Ado, the fisherman says, Kavra Tavye ba'chu, asuke ba'avu, michal b'vrei, ishte alei avu. All right, so now, here we're talking about a family tree of the fish. Now, the family tree of the fish, it's a little bit of a mashal, which is that the fish lives in the water. So therefore, the father of the fish is the water. Because the water is the place where the fish is found. The child of the water is the fish. In addition to that, the water, the seawater, also has salt in it. So the water is the father of the salt and the fish, which makes the salt and the fish brothers. Okay, given that background, that we can discuss it, which is Tavye Bachu. The best way to roast it is to use its brother. Its brother is the salt. So the way to, quote-unquote, cook the fish or prepare the fish is to salt the fish. That's what you want to do in order the preparation of the fish. Asuke, when you want to eat it, when you're ready for it, bavu. Avu is the father's water. You rinse it off with water. You wash it down. When you wash down the fish, you remove the salt, and now you have fish to eat. Michle bibre, and you want to eat it. That's the preparation standards. Now you want to actually eat it. Bibre, it's sun. What's the sun of the fish? You measure the brine that comes out of the fish. So the fish brine, if you eat the fish together with the fish brine, that's the best way to eat it. Ishte alei avu. And when you want to drink something along with fish, the proper drink to eat with fish is water. So drink water along with your fish. Vamarav amrli ada tzaidu. The ada, the fisherman, told me, kavra, fish, tachle, which is like cress, kichalva, and milk, liton gufa, velo liton purayo. After you have eaten them, better to be active than to be on the couch. All right, these are proper digestion of these items requires that you move around, not head straight from eating them to the couch, to your bed, to lay down. Vamarav, amarli, adatzaido. Again, the fisherman inside says, kavra tachle b'chalva, the same grouping here. The milk, the cress, and the fish. Maya velo shichva. You drink water with them, not beer. Shichva velo chamra, and beer and not wine. I mean that in a hierarchy of the things or the liquid that you should have alongside with them is water first. Then if you don't have water, you should use beer. If you don't have beer, then you would use wine. Wine's the last thing you want to have with your fish. And so this is the suggestions of Ado Tzaida, Ado the fisherman. Tosafot right away raises the issue and he says, listen, ubizman hazeh, nowadays, tofsim sakana lemeichal samuch l'sirchon. If you eat fish right before it's going rotten, it's dangerous. It's actually a significant issue, and we dump fish as soon as it gets rotten. I mean, as soon as fish starts to spoil, you want it out of there. You don't want to eat it. You want to get engaged in it. And here the Gemara is suggesting that's the best fish. What is going on over here? And also this thing that you only drink the water with it. We don't have a shema nishtanu. Maybe things have changed. This is a sheet of Tosafot. It's both a solution that Tosafot uses in many places, but it's also a dangerous solution. But this is what Tosafot suggests. V'shema nishtanu. Maybe things have changed. Kamo harufuot shebishas. What about all those medicinal medicines or ingredients that the Gemara gives you? Tells you this is good for this, this is good for this, and we try it and none of it works. So why is that? So he says the same thing. Sheinan tovot b'zman hazeh. Today you do any of this stuff, does nothing, doesn't help at all. So what is his answer? Meaning that this is times of change. The nature of the world or people's engagement with the world has changed. And because of that, these things don't work. They were true at their time, but not true in our time. Or maybe the water in Bavel has this impact, and this is the way the water in Bavel affected it, but we don't have that water. Two answers to Tosafot. Then there's a last answer. The last answer is that the word kavra does not mean fish generically, but kavra is a species or a type of fish. It's only true about this one species, or this kavra fish, but not true about fish in general. That's the last solution. The last solution of Tosafot is the simplest one and the easiest to understand because it doesn't require you to make this quantum leap that all of a sudden the world has changed. That's why it's more appealing, although it's a little harder because kavra is a word that's used as a generic term for fish in many places. Tosafot cites one other example where he thinks it doesn't mean that. It means a specific fish. But again, that's the easiest answer. The other two answers are that things have changed, which are dangerous answers in some sense, because if you say things have changed for a lot of things, and then you start to open up where the things that have changed, and therefore the halacha should not be true, halacha should be true. It really is a dangerous path to go down. But Tosafot definitely takes this approach. It's not the only place in Shas that he mentions it. He mentions with Maim Achronim as well, regards to Melech Stomit, the salt that gets on the fingers, it blinds the eyes. He says, we don't have any of this stuff. Or maybe we have Melech Stomit that doesn't do this. He says, Shemen Ishtanu at Tevayim. Again, maybe Teva has changed. Tosfot uses this refrain in a number of these situations where something that the Gemara talks about seemingly is not true today. And again, every time he says that things have changed. Right? And the question is, have things really changed? And that's a bigger question, whether things have changed. Maybe it's true that the makeup of people, what they can handle, has changed. That is probably true. The nature of people has changed. But still, how big is the change? And that's why many people reject the answer of Tosafot, because how do you know when to apply it? And how do you know whether it's really true? And that's why it's a difficult answer that is used. But Tosafot clearly has the shita throughout Shas. That's the Maral, and many times we'll argue that. Okay, you don't understand Melech Stomit. Okay, that's gone. But Mayim Achronim has other powers or benefits that are outside the natural realm. And so therefore we have to practice these things because even though the physical elements of them are not existent today, there's still a spiritual side to them that's important to keep. Right? Adron Alach, Mashkin Beit Ashlachin. And now we begin the second parak. The Mishnah begins. Mishafach et Zeitav. Someone already turned over his olives. Do you know what olives means? That he's making them ripe in the way that they're ready to be pressed. So at that moment when they're ready to be pressed, he's been storing them, and now they need to be pressed right away. Viru Avel. And all of a sudden, became an Avel. Something happened. Obviously, he's not in control of these situations. It happened. Now he's an Avel. And it sounds like from the Mishnah that the Avel would not be able to tend to this. What does he do? Now, the way Rashi means that, that's the end of the first sequence. And now the Mishnah goes on to another case. Onus. Or if he was, somehow, something happened that pushed him onto Chol HaMoed, and he was unable to do this prior to Chol HaMoed, now he's stuck on Chol HaMoed from whatever onus that happened. Shitu Upolim. He hired workers to come in and press the olives, and they didn't show up. They reneged on their side of the deal, they didn't show up, now he's stuck on Chol HaMoed. Then, in all these cases, Toen Korah Rishona, you're allowed to put on the first board, Aminichala Achar HaMoed, and then you have to leave it until the end of Chol HaMoed. You put the first pressing board on top, which is a heavy, heavy log that they put on top of the olives to press them. So you get the pressing started, but that's it. And then you let it go until after Chol HaMoed. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Zoleif, V'gomer, V'gaf, Kidarko. Now here, this is the Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda that were mentioned by Rav Ashi on the previous Amud. This is Rabbi Yehuda says you have to do a shinoi. You just can't do all the melachot. And Rabbi Yossi is basically saying you can do what you normally do. Now Zoleif is a word that usually means to sprinkle. As Rashi notes over here, anytime you're talking about pouring of liquids, moving of liquids, that's called Zoleif. So what Rabbi Yossi says is Zoleif. You press it. You move the liquids out. Vigomer, you finish whatever processing you need. Vigaf Kedarko, and then you can seal it the normal way. There's some question as to whether Gaf Kedarko belongs in the Girsa over here. There is a Girsa. Rashi took it out of the Girsa, Gaf Kedarko, because Migufata Chavit refers to wine. That's how you seal the barrel for wine. By wine, it's necessary to seal the barrel. By Shemen, by olive oil, there's no reason to seal the barrel. You might want to cover the barrel. You don't need to seal the barrel. So gaf kedarko is the wrong terminology being used here for olive oil. Now, Tosafot quotes it over here. It says, perish b'kunchish lishna achrina b'gaf mishum de'ika pseida. There is a loss here. Shemalachim below migufa, because if you take it without a seal. Then he says, obviously, that's just not true. I mean, that olive oil doesn't go bad because you leave it open. So he says here that the cover is necessary to prevent shvatzim and other things from getting dirt from getting into it. But he says, if that's the case, then it should be dayo b'kisui mat. You should only need then a simple covering. You don't need the migufa. You don't have to have it sealed in. V'shemen chadash mitkalkel. Maybe new olive oil needs it and you have to seal it like that. He's uncertain about that. But clearly, gaf kedarko, we'll see later on in the Gemara, is brought down in the context of wine. There it makes perfect sense. Over here, it's a little less, smooth in terms of its flow. So either you eliminate it, or you say gaf kedarko doesn't literally mean to seal, it means to cover, which you'd have to do with the olive oil. Okay, now, Gemara says, the Mishnah seems inconsistent, that's the way Rashi explains it. Others explain that all of this, the Avel, the Onus, and Shitu Upolim, all cause them to be delayed onto Chol HaMoed. But Rashi reads it as separate issues, and that's because of the way the Gemara asks here. Potach be'Avel, the Mishnah seems to be talking about a Velut at first, V'siyem be'Moed, and then jumps over to Chol HaMoed. So, which one are we in? Are we talking about a Velut, or are we talking about Chol HaMoed? So I'm Rav Shisha Breid Rav Yidi. Zot Omert. Let me explain to you what this means. Dvarim amutarim b'moed, asurim b'me'evlo. Things that are mutar to do, melacha that's mutar to do on Chol HaMoed, you may not do during your period of Eilut. Which means, that by avilut there is no dispensation for melachet davar haaved. Melachet davar haaved, or dispensation that is used by chol hamoed, is a dispensation that will not exist by avilut. Basically, Rav Shisha Rav Yehudi says that avilut is more chamur than chol hamoed. By chol hamoed, it is mutar, or certain melachot are mutarim. Whereas by avil, there is no dispensation. No melacha is allowed at all. Rav Ashi Amar, lo mi bayi kamar. Rav Ashi says that it's not only this, but this. Lo mi bayi bimeyev lo dimir derabanan hu bishari. By his avilut, where avilut is only mi derabanan, and over there, it's bishari, ela afilu moed. Dis melacha mi doraita, bimakom seda, shoru abonon. So, now you don't need to tell me by bimeyev lo, that it's a din derabanan, it's mutar. But ela afilu b'moed, the isur melacha midoraita, where there is an isur melacha from the Torah, but makom seda sharu banan. Over there, the rabbanon allowed you or gave you a dispensation to deal with it. So that's what it means, lo mi bay. That not only is it true by avilut, it's also true by chol hamoed. Here you have two statements of the Gemara, which are controversial, because, as we said in our introduction to Masechet Moed Katan, there's a huge machloket as to whether melacha on chol hamoed is an isur d'oraita or an isur d'rabanan. Here is one of the strongest statements by the Gemara that melacha on chol hamoed is d'oraita. That's what the Gemara says over here. Isur melacha is mi d'oraita by chol hamoed. And we quoted this in the Gemara. How the others deal with this, how those that say d'rabanan deal with this, is they don't mean it's literally mi d'oraita. It's just an asmachta mi'akra. Unlike Avelut, which doesn't have an Asmachta Miyakra, Chol Hamoed does have an Asmachta from the Pasuk, and therefore it's called Doraita in face of the Avelut, which is a pure Dirabanan. That's how they explain away the problem. But the other statement is as important, which is, here you can see Gilgal Shas points you to Tosafot and Daf Yudalit, because Daf Yudalit discusses the other issue, which is Avelut Doraita, or is Avelut Dirabanan? Also a Machloket, whether Avelut, at least on the first day, is Doraita, versus the Rabbonon. Here the Gemara makes an unequivocal statement that Avelut is the Rabbonon. So anybody who says it's the right has to deal with this Gemara as far as what does it mean that Avelut is the Rabbanan. Right? We'll get there. We haven't discussed that. I mentioned that in the introduction and we'll get there when we get to Avelut discussing the difference between whether Avelut is the right or whether Avelut is the Rabbanan. So both of these statements, this is an important daf for both of those issues and it takes up both of them here. So now in terms of the answers, Rav Shisha Brei the Rav Idi says that Avilut is more chamur than chol hamoed. Now you have to ask the question, which is based on the next line in the Gemara, which is if Avilut is derabbanan and chol hamoed is deoraita, what's the reason to be more machmir by Avilut than it is to be by chol hamoed? So there are different approaches. One approach is simply for the same reason. Since it's a derabbanan, we're more machmir in order to give tokef, to give power to the din derabbanan. The chol hamoed, which is the din deoraita, doesn't need strengthening. So therefore you don't have to worry. Then there are dispensations from malacha. Avelut, which is derabbanan, how do we make sure that it takes hold? No dispensations, no exceptions to the rule. So that's why there's a distinction. That's one approach to this. The other approach to this is, there's a difference between avelut and chol hamoed. The difference being, other people. By avelut, you are a sole individual who is restricted. Other people are not restricted. So basically, what you could do is pass on your work to other people. If you can't do it, someone else can do it in your stead. And that's why we say you're asur the gamre, because there are other people there that can fill you in. On the other hand, when it comes to chol hamoed, that's not going to work. If you can't do it, guess what? Nobody else can do it either. I mean, the isur melacha is equally applicable to everybody. So therefore, if you can't do it, nobody can do it. If there's, that means that nobody's not going to get done. That's why it then becomes, oh, that's a davar aved. You can do that melacha on chol hamoed. So those are two different approaches to why avelut is more chamur than chol hamoed. The same would be true, which is that even if you believe Avelut is Doraita, this distinction still stands, which is that over here, he's the only person who is restricted, others would not be restricted, right? Whereas by the case of Chol Hamoed, that's just not true. Everybody else is in the same boat that he is in, right? Of the difference between Avelut, which is a personal issue, versus Chol Hamoed, which is a public issue, right? So that's the Rav Shisha Brei the Rav Idi, that's explaining his position. And Rav Ashi makes a similar distinction, which is, both of them have the dispensations, but it's just giving you a hierarchical order, which says, not only by Dinei Derabanan, but even Dinei Doraita, we still have this dispensation of Makom Seda. The Makom Seda works, not only in Dinei Derabanan, it also works in Dinei Doraita, meaning even in Cholom Moed, that dispensation exists. Now, Tanya Kavalti, the Rav Shisha Brei, the Rav Yidi, we have a Brei that supports his position. Elu Dvarim Osim La'Avel, we may have lo. These are the things you can do for an Avel during his Avilut. Now, we're going to list a whole bunch of things that are Dover Aved. What do you see from this? That, when it comes to Dover Aved, someone else has to do it. Whose position demands that someone else does it? That's Rav Shisha Brei, the Rav Yidi, because he says, the Avel can't do it, point blank. No exceptions. For the way that Rav Ashi explains it, there should have been exceptions here. These should have been allowed. The fact they're not allowed shows you that the Braita supports that position that has been stated by Rav Shisha Brei the Rav Yidi, which is Zeitav Hafuchin. So these olives already ripened and mixed. Toanim lo, that someone's got to put the board on for him. They can do it for him. V'kadol laguf. So here, by the way, Tosfot has the word bor here. Bor is a terminology that's definitely used by a wine press. But kadol, also kadim, are used by wine. So that's why here, kadol laguf. His wine is in the barrels and they need to be sealed. Then someone will seal it for him. Somebody can do that, goes in and seals it for him. Pishtanola lot mina mishra. The flax is ready to be taken out from being soaked, to be pulled out of where it's being soaked. Then someone else can go in there and pull it out for him. Tzimarola lot mina yora. They're coloring, they're dyeing the wool. It's in the cauldron now being dyed, and it's time to take it out. It's going to burn or get ruined. Someone else can take it out on his half. Umarbitzim sadeyu. Again, the word marbitzim we've seen before has two definitions. One either means to water normally, but it refers to a certain type of field, like a beit abal. Or marbitzim means to sprinkle, a lighter form of watering. One of those two. Marbitzim sadeyu. When you can water the field for him, bishitagia unata maim shelo. When his turn for the water comes. Now, there are two different ways to explain his turn for the water. One way to explain it, which many of you shouldn't even take up, which is there's a canal that goes into the valley, goes through this area. And basically, they have a system by which each individual gets one day to divert the canal into his field and to water his fields. So it's his day to divert the canal. If he doesn't divert it that day, he's going to be locked out and he's not going to be able to do it because other people need the canal the other days. So someone can go and do that for him and divert the canal on his behalf. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it is that they actually have a co-op where they all own fields in this valley and they don't want to go every day and have to water each one of them, have to go down and do it. So what they do is they take turns. They have each person does it on behalf of everybody each day. His turn comes around to do the watering. Well, if he doesn't do it, everybody's going to lose out. So we can put someone else in his place in order to do it. All of these items are Dover Aved. And what do you see the Braita says? Get someone else to do it. That's like Rav Shisha Brei de Ravidi. Yudomer, Avzorim lo Sadeh Nir. If he has a field that's plowed and ready to be seeded, you can seed for him. If you have a field that is available for planting flax, then we go ahead and plant flax on his behalf. So what Rav Yehuda says is that both of these are losses. If he doesn't seed now, then he'll have to seed later. He may not get as good a crop. If he doesn't put in pishtan, which is a high-priced crop, now, it'll be too late later on, and he'll have to put in some other crop. So both of these involve loss, but they're smaller degrees of loss. They're not permanent loss. They are a temporary loss or maybe a loss of profit, which is opportunity cost. And that's what the Rabbanan answered. Amrulo, they said back to Rabbi Yehuda, Im lo tizra bebachir, tizra be'afel. If he doesn't do it, bachir, from the word bachor means early on. If he doesn't seed early in the season, tizra be'afel, he can seed later in the season. Okay, maybe it's better to seed early on. But it's not a complete wipeout. If he doesn't seed now, he's not going to lose the whole field. Right, okay, that's clear. If it's a dover aved, then it's no question that he can do it. Here it's not, what they're saying is this is not a pseida gdola. This is not a huge loss. It's simply a loss, or we call it a deferment of profitability, because he might not get as good a crop, it might be as good, but he's still going to make it. He's not going to a zero. So that's not dover aved. No tizra pishtan, tizra minacher. If he doesn't plant flax, he'll plant something else. So it won't be as big a cash crop as flax, but still he'll get something in there and he will make money, he just won't make as much money. So that's how the Chachamim answered. This is not really a Dova Aved, this is more like Harvacha. It's like Harvacha, you don't have permission to do it. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Zeitav Avuchim, Vein Sham Uman Elohu. What happens if the olives are ready and you got to put the board on it, but there's nobody in town that can do it? Right, now Tosafot brings two different ways to define this. Ein sham uman elohu, which means there's nobody who is as good as he is. He's the best at this. There's just nobody as good as him to do it. That's one way to explain it. Or ein sham uman means that if we could find another uman, we'd have him do it. We just can't find another uman to do it. That's why he's got to do it. So there are two ways that Tosafot explains it over here. Now, based on that, kadol aguf, his barrel is ready to be sealed. Vein sham muman elohu, same thing again. He's the only one around. Bishtano la'alot min ha-mishra, his flax to be taken out of the soaking. Tzmero la'alot min ha-yora, or his wool is to be taken out of the cauldron. Vein sham uman elohu, again, if he's the only one present, there's again two tzos vote. Either he's the only one who can do, he's the best at it, or that we can't find anybody else, therefore he's the best, he's the only one we can choose now. Herzei yaseh b'tzina, that he should do privately. Again, there's really a davar avid, because if the best guy doesn't do it, or if he's the only one there to do it, then there is a significant loss. If it's done by a hedjot instead of a woman, you're going to incur significant losses. You could lose everything here. If it's not done right, you could ruin it. So therefore, he's allowed to do it, but he has to do it b'tzina. We don't do it in a public, do it in a private way. Yeter al-kein, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, imaya uman derabim, if he was a public servant, that he is in some sort of role that involves public service, or the sapar ubalan rabim, he's a hairdresser, hair cutter for the public, or balan is a bathhouse attendant for the public, v'igya eit regel, and now it's cholam moed, or the regel is coming up, v'ein sham uman eluhu, ar zeh yaseh, he's allowed to do it. Here there's no option for tzina, because it's a public job. Public job, there's no way he can do a bitzina because he's going to engage with the public. Since he's going to engage with the public, they can't make a demand of him on tzina. Here he's allowed to do it again because there's a significant need for his services. As that Tosfot explains it, meaning that here there are two things. One is that the seida of the maskir, seida of the maskir is the one who needs his services, is going to lose out. Then the other thing is, you have a velut where nobody else can do it. So if I put those two things together, I gave him a dispensation. This is the one dispensation we have by a velut, which is two things combined, which is, first of all, no one else like him. Number two is, someone else is going to suffer a loss because of that. Whether it's the public at large, whether it's maybe even him himself, in those cases, we're going to give you the dispensation to do it. If it's possible to do it privately, you got to do it privately. If it's a public job, then obviously you do it in the public. But this is a dispensation that allows him to do it when he is the only one available to do it. So again, here, you're coming into Erev Yom Tov, everybody needs a haircut, and this guy's an Avel. And then they're going into right into the regal, and nobody's going to get their haircut. So he can cut their hair, because otherwise nobody's hair is going to get cut before Yom Tov. Now we go on to other types of engagements between people. Harisin, sharecroppers, v'chakirin, v'kablanim. These are three different ways to engage in business. Arisim are sharecroppers who take a percentage of the output of the field. They give a percentage to the balabait and they keep a percentage of the output. Chakirin are people who pay a fixed amount of the produce every year. So out of the produce, out of the harvest, they have to give a fixed amount. Doesn't matter how much the harvest is, no matter what the harvest is, they give that fixed price. But it's out of the materials of the harvest. He has to pay it. So there, the percentage could fluctuate depending on the crop or the production of the field. No, it is a steady rent, but it's a rent that comes out of the production of the field. The next one is kablanin. Kablanin is more like that, which is, it's a fixed payment for usage of something. Fixed payment for you to do something, to engage in something. So you have three different ways that you can have a relationship here. Hari elu, yasu acherin bishvilan. In all these cases, get someone to fill in for you. So even though in each of these cases, there might be a loss to the other party, nevertheless, we bring in another, we can bring someone else. Someone else can replace him. By avodat hakarka, someone else can replace him. Al-Khamarim, Vagamalin, Vasapanim. So here we're talking about Safanim. These are basically haulers, but it's all about the distance of the hauling. So you have the Khamarim, which are the short haul. You have the Gamalim, which are the long haul. And then the Safanim, which is the overseas haul. So basically that's the three different types of hauling over here. These are different professionals. Right. These are the different professionals. FedEx, UPS, ground, air. Right, exactly. So that's what you have here. Hari elo, lo yasu. They can't do it. We're not going to let them gauge and do this work here. Vimayu mukkarin or muskarin. What happens if they were hired out? Whether it's their animal that was hired out or they are hired out to someone else, it's lacherim. Hari yasu. They must do it. Because when it's for themselves, when they're their own professional, maybe basically they own their own business, then if they don't go to work, they're going to lose out because they don't do the business, but they're not causing a loss to anybody else, it's lost revenue. So lost revenue, you can say, don't do it, and you're off. You're off for that week for the Avelut. On the other hand, if they already have now engaged in a long, Rashi says here, Chodesh or Chodeshim, Chodshayim, that they did it for a month or 2 months. I mean, it's a long-term engagement with someone else. Now they've hired them. They're on the hook, or basically they need to be there to take care of this business. If they don't go, they're going to hurt the person that hired them. In that case, they go to work, because you can't do it at the expense of someone else. So the avel will go to work to support the other party, because otherwise the other party is going to lose out. Vimayu schir yom, a day laborer, afilu be'ir acheret, even though he's working in a different city, lo yaseh. He's out. Why? Because the schir yom is allowed to back out of his job. A day laborer has a right to back out, even halfway through his job, to back out. That's the nature of a day laborer, which is that they're not even like a day laborer, they're like an hourly laborer. Whenever they want to leave, they can leave. They get paid based on the amount of time they do. So even though they don't know you're an avel in the other city, you can stay home from work. And that's it, because a person, by hiring schir yom, is going to use that labor. That type of labor is cheaper, but you know there's risks with that labor, which is that these are migrant workers, these are workers that can disappear at any moment. And so because of that, we say that lo yaseh, they don't have to do work, they can back out. Hayta melechet acherim biyado. What happens if he is a craftsman and other people have given him what to do? Af al pi shebikibolet, even though he's doing this on a contractual basis, meaning that he's a contractor for this work, lo yaseh, you can't do it. So Mar says, af al pi shebikibolet. So you're suggesting now, even though he's a contractor, he can't do it. Velo mi ba'ish eni kibolet. And if he wasn't a contractor, certainly he couldn't do it. Says adraba. That's not a logical way to say it, because kibolet kididei dami. Kibolet, when you're a contractor, it's as if it's your own. I mean that you have control over it. A contractor says, I get paid for this, you gotta show up with the results. How you do it, how long do you take to you, that's your problem. So in that case, he can make his decision. He'll take off the 7 days for us of Elut and have to make it up. So he's gonna get paid less now, because he's gonna have to spread it over more time. He's gonna lose time, but that's your choice. So if he's a contractor to someone else, he should make that choice and not engage. So then Gemara says, Ela Ema, this is the way it should read, Ben Kibola, Ben Shani Kibola. Whether he's a contractor or not a contractor, lo yaseh, he should not be involved, because he has the right to back out. With a contractor, he can back away. And Shani Kibola, he can't do it because it's in his house. So we're going to tell him, try to get out of it. You got to try to get out of the work. Haytam lachto biyad acherim. What happens if he gave over work to others to do? Contractors work on his behalf. Bibei tol yasu. If it's in his house, they can't do it. Bibayit acher yasu. If it's in someone else's house, then they can do it on his behalf, because nobody knows it's his stuff. They're working on his stuff in their house. Doesn't matter. That's fine. There's no isur here in their item. There's nothing wrong with the chafetz. The chafetz doesn't have to rest. Yeah, there's no shvitat behema, that type of thing. It's just rather that you can't have his stuff working or doing the work. So here, where it's someone else doing the work, and they're doing it on his behalf, but nobody would know that because they're doing it in their house, that's fine. Totally fine. And now we have a case. Marion Brei de Rabin, an Amora, Omar Brei de Ravacha, Brei de Rovos. So you have these two Amoraim, Avalu Hau Gimla de Torah. They had this oxen that were hitched together. Basically a team of oxen, in which each one of them contributed one ox to the team. And now they have their yoke put on together. So Bahadei Adodi, they were in this partnership. It's Ra'am Be Milta B'mar Brei de Ravacha Brei de Rovos. Bad thing happened to him. Bad omen happened. What does that mean? Avelut. Somebody passed away, and now he's Avelut. Upaske legamle. He broke up the team. He took his animal back, and he broke up the team. He says, I'm not letting my animal go to work. Rashi says over here, it's an amazing statement. He says, why did he do that? He says, Avishai Avel, umetzuve al shvitat behem domi drabanan. He should stop his animal from doing work. That's what Rashi suggests over here. I'm Ravashi. Gavra rabba kamar brei dravacha avit hachi. Wait a minute, a great guy like this, a great scholar like this, how could he do this? It's one thing if he wants to be lifnim mishur at din on his own expense, that's one thing, fine. You don't have to give up this work, why? Because we saw before, mukharim muskarim lacharim. If this is already hired out to someone else, you can't back out of it, you have to go to work. So their team of oxen were already hired out or given to others, whether it was because they traded off and he was doing it for the other person, his partner, or because they really hired it out to other people to do the work. Now, they can go to work. You have permission to go to work. So now, what do you say? Lefnim Eshurat Adin. I don't want to go to work because I'm an Avel. I know that it's okay, but I really don't want to do it. That's fine. That's your loss. Go ahead. But, Adachirim Lochayish? When someone else is involved, and someone else is lost, how can he make a decision to be Lefnim Eshurat Adin? That's both from if the person who hired you needs you, or versus also the case where you are partners in making the money. He's going to lose out because you want to go to Lifnim Mishur at the din. How can you do that? Vatanya, a brighter that we just brought before him, Hayam Muskarim or Muhkarim, Eitzel Acherim, Eilu Yasu. We just said that if you're rented out to someone else, you can go ahead and do it. It says, who savar? His answer was, Odom Choshev Shiny. He was a public individual, and Odom Choshev is different. Now, you could, this could manifest itself in many different ways. Odom Choshev Shiny means either because his animal was well known to everybody because he's an Odom Choshev, that means that it's not going to be quiet. When his animal goes to work, everybody's going to know that he's working on him during his Avelut. But if it was nondescript or nondiscreet, it was discreet, then you could just say, go to work, because nobody knows. Your animal's doing work. What's the big deal? Nobody knows it. But it's Odom Choshev, everybody knows that his animal's engaged. That's one way to say it. The other way to say it is Odom Choshev Shiny, which is, since he's a big honcho, he has the right, basically, to enforce on the other person the loss. Which means, when you get into a partnership with a big gun, know that that's going to cost you. If he's a big gun, he can pull the plug on this and do this. Now, the other way to learn it is just a simple Odom Choshev Shiny, which is, we don't want people to learn. He basically wants to set this up that a Avelim can't work. People are not going to be able to make that distinction about what his animal, it wasn't him, it was hired out before. When he's a public figure, he's got to do everything to make people understand that you can't work during your Avelut. Right now, Amar Shmuel, Mekablei Kibolet B'toch HaTchum Asur. Contractors that are within the Tchum may not work. Chutz L'Tchum Mutar. If they're outside of the Tchum, they can't work. So if you have contractors, the first thing that are hired to build you a house, if they're within the Tchum, they can't do it, because everybody knows they're working for you. And that means they're doing, it's like as if you hired them on that day to do the work. And then if they're outside of the Tchum, nobody knows they're working, because nobody can see what they're doing. So nobody has any idea, you can go ahead and do it. Why? Because there's nothing wrong here. You didn't hire them today, you didn't hire them to work on Shabbat, you contracted with them over the long term to build the house. They want to work on Shabbat, fine. If it's in the Tchum, people are not going to know whether they're contractors or laborers, so therefore we don't allow it. Outside of the Tchum, where nobody can see it, they can do as they please. Now, the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Papa, afilu chutz l'tchum, even outside of the tchum, no amar ela deleka mato demikarva la'ata." So if there's not another city that's close by or proximate to it. Okay, your city, you can't get there from your city. But there's another Jewish city that's right there, and they can get there. But ika mato demikarva la'ata masur. In that case, it is asur, the Gemara. Amar Rav Mesharshia, v'chi leka mato demikarva la'ata, nami lo amran ela b'shabbatot v'yamim tovin. That's only true at Shabbat and Yom Tov, where there's an isra of tchum, so you can't travel out there. Nobody's going to go there because it's outside of the Tchum. If it's Chol HaMoed, where people do travel and there's no din of Tchum, then it'll be Asur even outside the Tchum because Jewish people are going to end up there. They're going to see them doing the work and they're going to think you hired them and Chol HaMoed to do the work. Over here, the way that we read the Gemara is that this is talking about Chol HaMoed. It's talking about an Avel, it's also talking about a Chol HaMoed and hiring a Nachri. As we explain it. Because of that, you have a problem. Because Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel argue in the beginning of the first parak in Shabbat about giving work to a Nachri going into Shabbat. And there Beit Hillel says it's permissible to give work to a Nachri going into Shabbat. You can give your laundry to a Kobes Nachri because he's going to do the work. He's not doing it specifically for you. He's going to launder it and he can make a choice. You're allowed to give over your car to a mechanic to work on over Shabbat. Now, that's only if you gave him enough time to do it before Shabbat or after Shabbat. If he chooses to work on Shabbat, that's his problem. That's his decision if he wants to work there. As long as you gave him the opportunity to do it before or afterwards, then it's fine. Same thing with the Kobes. If he has room to do it, no problem. So how come over there we let you give work to a Nachri, and over here we're not letting you give work to a Nachri? So Rashi over here says the difference is that over there, even though it's inside the Tchum, the clothing is not discernible or not discrete items that people know it's your clothing that he's laundering. The launderer goes out and he launders clothing. He has a bunch of clothing. Who knows that it's your clothing, someone else's clothing? Nobody has an idea what clothing it is. So Rashi says that, in that case, it's Metzina. Nobody knows it, so that's why it's okay. Over here, what's your house? And they're building it. So obvious. So that's why it's Asur. That's the way that he learns it. Tosfot, on the other hand, quotes from Rabbeinu Yaakov. Rabbeinu Yaakov is the Rabbeinu Tam. Right, Rabbeinu Yaakov be Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is the son-in-law of Rashi. Rabbeinu Yaakov is the grandson of Rashi, the son of Rabbi Meir. He is Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam, here, Tosfot just hints at it, but Rabbeinu Tam in Avodah Zarah and other places states it explicitly, has a huge shita about it, says that when it comes to a contractor, there's no problem to do it, even inside the Tchum. You can have your contractor work on your house on Shabbos in the Tchum with everybody there. Why? This Gemara is talking about Avelut. This Gemara, like the continuation of everything we spoke about before, is Avelut. This is also Avelut. It's a little hard to argue that. Tosfot at the end says Tzarchion because it says, well, Shabbat and Yom Tov, Chol HaMoed, what do they have to do with Avelut? All that really has talking about is working on Shabbat, Yom Tov, and Chol HaMoed. It has nothing to do with Avelut. says Sarchilun. You're right. That's a good thing. But the Rabbeinu Tam has a position that when it comes to a contractor is not a problem. Because a contractor is, as we said before, it's his own work. When you're hired to do work, somebody else is a contractor, you can stop during your Avelut because it's yours. Your decision when you work, it's a question of how you're going to earn the money. You're paid a fixed amount of money to finish this project. It takes you twice as long, you're getting paid half as much. That's your choice, how you do go about doing this. So when you did a contractor is doing his own reconnaissance. So same thing here. When the Nachri, when you hire him as a contractor, he works on Shabbat, that's his choice. Doesn't work on Shabbat, that's his choice. Nothing to do with you. You're not forcing him to work on Shabbat. It's clear that you're not doing it. It's obvious to everybody that you hired him as a contractor. If he's a contractor, then it's very obvious. And the Rabbeinu Tam was willing then to have a house built on Shabbat inside the Tchum by a contractor, with everybody knowing, because they know it's a contractor. It's his choice. So Rabbeinu Tam said that. He was matir, I think, other people. But when it came to his own house, he wouldn't do it. That's very interesting. But the Gemara in Bodhisattva talks about this shita of the Rabbeinu Tam extensively. Tosafot talks about it. The shita of Rabbeinu Tam, he thinks that contractors are not a problem on Shabbat. We don't paskin this way. But he doesn't think they're a problem at all. We paskin that it is a problem. You can't have people working on your house on Shabbat and Yom Tov and Chol HaMoed. But this is the shita of the Rabbeinu Tam, and that's how he deals with the reconciling with the Gemara and Shabbat. He has no problem. He says, that's talking about Shabbat. This is talking about Avelut. Therefore, Avelut is Asur, Shabbat is Mutar. That's the difference between them, and that's how he explains the difference between these sugiyot. Marzutra, Bray the Rav Nachman, Banule Apandana. It was a mansion that was built for him, Mikabale Kibolet, from contractors. Contractors built him a big mansion. Chutz L'Tchum, outside the Tchum, which should be Mutar. Ikla Rav Safra, Ravuna, Bar Chinina, Velo Alu L'Gabe. They would not enter this house. Vika Damre, Hunami Lo Al B'Gabe. That he would enter his own house. Why? V'amar Shmo Mikabale Kibolet B'Toch HaTchum Asur, Chutz L'Tchum Mutar. Should be Mutar, based on what we saw earlier in the Gemara. It says, Odom Choshuv Shiny. One answer is, he's a big gun. Big gun, everybody knows about it. Therefore, you can't say that Chutz L'Tchum is enough, because people will know that people worked on his house. Everybody's watching when it comes to him. Big Adamre, Suyuya Siyai Betivna Be'adayu. He had non-Jewish servants that helped out with giving straw to the contractors, and therefore now you have a problem, because now his servants did get involved. And when they got involved, that means people that are working for him did something on Shabbat, and that is a problem. Rav Chama Sharlo La Abunagre Debe Resh Galuta. The Abunagre Rashi says the people take care of the tables, like the table stewards. They were allowed to work on Chol HaMoed. Amar, Kevan Dagar Lo Kashakle. They don't get paid for their work. But how do they get paid? They're allowed to eat. And they get their room and board from the Resh Galuta. So since they don't get paid directly for their work, they just get room and board, it's allowed. Because since they're not taking pay, therefore, Shirashu Yehu Dukar Mishar Shulei. They just want to please him because they get their job and they can keep eating. The late Lamba, and therefore there's no problem. Since it's not a wage, it's not a problem. Here there's Machloket Rishonim about who these Abunagre are. Are they Abunagre Jews or non-Jews? If they are non-Jews, then we understand why they were allowed to do this work on Chol HaMoed. The question is then, if they're non-Jews, why is it a problem? The answer might be, if you pay them, you pay a non-Jew to do it, then he becomes, in a sense, your shliach, and if you can't do it, then the non-Jew can't do it. So that would be to explain the Gemara, that's easy to explain. The other way to explain the Gemara is that Bugare were Jews that were doing it. Now, why were they allowed to do this? So maybe it's a Dover Oved, maybe that's why they're allowed. Tzorcho Chonevish, maybe they're allowed to do it. What you learn from this Gemara is, if you pay them, it changes everything. So therefore, people are allowed to do Melocha for Dover Oved, they're allowed to do Melocha for the Ochel Nefesh, or Dover Hedjot, if it's Tzorcho Moed, but as long as they don't get paid. If they get paid, that makes it into Melocha, and you can't do it. The way that we paskin is actually like this, that if you pay somebody, it's a problem, unless it's another dispensation of Chol HaMoed, it's someone who doesn't have a living. They have nothing to eat. It's a Poel who needs the work. If he doesn't get the work, he's not going to live. He can't survive. So in that case, he has permission to work. Since he has permission to work, if you pay him, it's not a problem. So that's another dispensation in Dover of Melocha and Chol HaMoed, is someone who needs it to live. He needs the living. He won't live without it. He won't be able to succeed at making a living. So because of that, it's Mutar. So that's the exception to the rule. If you pay someone who needs it for a living, that's allowed. Okay, we're going to stop over here.